Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. By the way, be sure and drop us a note or, and this is new, send us a short audio clip telling us what's on your mind, what's going on for the summer, your favorite vacation story, that kind of thing. Just use a smartphone or a digital recorder and send the file, or just a note if you'd rather, to our email address at indianaweekend@gmail.com. National Model Aviation Day is August 17th. That means something special on the east side of Muncie, home to the Academy of Model Aeronautics. This is a group that represents more than 156,000 model aviation enthusiasts. Summer is a busy time on the AMA's airfields, with pilots from across the country in national competitions to prove who the best flyers are. In this age of drone aircraft, military unmanned aerial vehicles, and growing use of drones by police and others, it won't surprise you to learn that people interested in these new high-tech craft are turning to the AMA for advice and information. To meet some of the people involved in this, we stopped out at the AMA recently during their national flying competitions.
My name is Robert Green. I am from Omaha, Nebraska, and I'm a salesman.
You're a salesman during the week, and
I'm a salesman during the week and a pilot on the weekends.
Tell me about your plane.
So my plane is called a Pattern Airplane. It's designed by a company by the name of Krill and out of the Czech Republic.
This is a radio-controlled airplane.
That's correct.
But this is not something that you see in the stores. It seems very large. How wide is that?
So it's about 6.5 by 6.5. So 2 meters by 2 meters, and it has to be less than 11 pounds for us to compete in competition here at the AMA.
And so what is this area of competition that you're doing now? You said pattern. What is it that you have to do?
So basically, if you can think of figure skating on ice, we're doing figure skating in the sky.
Aerobatics.
Exactly. So based on our maneuvers, we're being judged on how well we accomplish what the maneuver is.
Describe what you did, because
sure.
I was watching it, but
sure.
I wouldn't know how to tell anybody.
Absolutely. So if you can think of, the number 8, but instead of it being vertical, you could turn it horizontal, and that would be a reverse Cuban 8.
Oh, but you're going upside down.
Upside down, and then you're back right side up, and then you're upside down again and right side up. So it's very interesting.
How long did it take you to learn to do that?
So I've been flying model airplanes since about 2000. And I've been flying patterns since 2004. That's almost 9 years of dedication trying to get to the top of my class.
I have to wonder how many of these planes you have to buy.
Oh, God.
I've flown the little radio controlled helicopters and bought quite a few.
Yep, this is a very interesting question. I actually lost 2 of them this summer, 7 days apart from each other. And as you've seen, these planes are quite large, and they're not inexpensive.
How could you lose? Oh, by a crash.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what I mean by lose. So we don't say crash, we say lost. And I think it lessens the blow.
Tell me how you do it, though, because it must take just how many hours of practice does it take to be able to do this?
So it takes a lot of dedication. You know, I try to fly at least 3 days a week. As often as I can. So after work, I'll head to the field, or on the weekends, I'll try to head to the field for a couple of practice sessions. I try to fly at least 4 or 5 whenever I go there, just to make myself stay with the timing that you need to do all the maneuvers.
I imagine taking off is one thing, but landing has to be. Is that the tough part?
Well, they say taking off is optional and landing is required. At some point, it's going to come down. So it takes a lot of effort, especially when it's this windy. We have a 20 mile an hour gusts coming right down the runway, which is a good thing. So it helps us to, practice and practice and practice.
And we can hear the wind now, by the way. It is really gusting out here. How much does your airplane weigh?
So my airplane is about 10 pounds, 4 ounces.
Okay. I watched you land that, and I'm a former student pilot, and I really admire the way. Now, you were headed right into the wind, but still,
yes.
I mean, you just slowed that thing down, and just gently, it just kissed the ground.
Yeah, that is a beautiful airplane to land. You just, you know, pull the throttle back and just hold the elevator, and she'll come right in for you.
I'm just amazed. Oh, does it help that there are almost like these video game kind of simulators now?
You know what? It does help quite a bit, especially where I'm from. I live in Nebraska, so we can't fly in the winter. So that's what we have to do to keep ourselves a little bit practiced up until, you know, we start to thaw out in about March, April.
Start to thaw out. What, when people first get started in this, what kind of an investment does it entail?
That's a great question. So when I first started, I think I got into my airplane for about $300. And that was a trainer airplane. It comes with fuel and, you know, a transmitter to transmit to the airplane to tell it what to do. And that's pretty much the initial cost to get into it. Now it's gotten a lot cheaper because of electrics.
Well, yours is battery-powered, for instance.
That's correct.
Are you saying you started with a piston engine?
That's correct. Started with a piston-driven engine.
Are most people going to the battery?
Most people are. I would say about 90% of the folks here. So there's about 100 and maybe 120 of us. I'd say about 100 of people here so far are all battery. And there's maybe about 20 or so that are still doing the piston-driven engines.
So if you were just getting started now, what would the entry level be?
So you can get into it now for about $150.
That doesn't seem like very much.
No. So for
assuming you don't lose too many.
Well, you know what? When I first started, and they still have it today, it's called a buddy box. So they hook your transmitter to somebody else who is a more experienced pilot, and they control the airplane for you until... And they give you the controls back and forth until you master it, and then you're able to solo and, quote-unquote, get your wings.
But really, and people can hear. Listen, folks, we're standing under a tent here, and you can hear all the things flapping and everything. You don't start out on days like this.
Absolutely not. This is the typical day that I probably would not fly on. And, you know, hindsight's now 20/20. You probably should, because you never know what you're going to expect when you show up at the Nationals.
That's Robert Green of Omaha, Nebraska, one of more than 1,000 model airplane pilots in Muncie during July for the National Aero Modeling Championships. If you haven't been out to the Academy of Model Aeronautics, it's worth a visit for the museum, if nothing else. If you're lucky, you might be out there when some of the pilots are flying these remote-controlled aircraft. It's pretty impressive.
Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly away.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
The AMA National Championships for Model Aviation have just wrapped up on the east side of Muncie. They had about 100 different events. About 1,200 pilots were here, along with hundreds of spectators. Among the competitors on one very windy day was this gentleman. So we're in out on the windswept AMA flight line under a tent, and you can hear it snapping in the wind. I'm talking with John Ford from Kansas City. What kind of wind do we have out here today, John?
Today the airport's reporting winds straight down the runway, which is good, but they're at around 10 to 20 miles an hour, and I think we've seen some peaks at 25 today.
I was just going to say, it's gusting pretty good.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of
noisy here. Can you explain this sport a little bit for people who are not familiar with it?
Yeah, actually this sport is quite interesting. It's sometimes I describe it as being, it's like a figure skating competition in the air, because you're sitting in front of judges. You have 17 to 23 compulsory maneuvers that you must do in a sequence, and you're judged on grace, position, precision, and speed, and so overall geometry. So it's really you're pitting piloting skills against other pilot skills. And the airplanes are, all of them have different names and different designs, but they're pretty much all the same. So any one of us would feel very comfortable flying each other's airplanes.
I was just watching somebody practicing, and you were watching too, and in the course of, you saw a snap roll, there were...
Generally, all the maneuvers are built as a sequence of rolls and, you know, climbing and diving, sometimes at an angle, sometimes combined with loops.
Okay.
And half loops and square loops and triangles. So all of those maneuvers are combined into sequences that actually change every 3 years, just to keep it fresh and to make sure that people don't get complacent.
So it's not
skills.
Like you can learn how to do it and you're all set, right?
No, that's right.
What's the hardest part about this kind of flying? When you think back to, because you've been doing this for a while, I think.
Yeah, I've been at it for 40 years. I won't date myself by saying that. But
this isn't the senior master class, is it?
So that's why it's fun. My son has got into it 5 years ago, so now he's in the same class as I am, and of course he's beat me in my own class, which is great for a dad.
Now, if you're flying back to Kansas City and the pilot has a heart attack or something like that, can you step in there and get that plane down?
Well, actually, yes, because I also have a pilot's license. So I know where you're going with that question, but I'm cheating a little bit, right? I've also been flying for a long time.
Is that right? Flying a private aircraft?
I used to be in the military reserve while I was in college, and I kept it up ever since then. I don't fly commercially, but I just fly for fun now.
In the military, fixed wing?
Okay. Fixed wing, yeah. I used to fly search and rescue and close support, so I flew pretty much everything with a fixed wing and a propeller. I never flew jets.
Prop aircraft. Yeah. Oh, okay. How would you, if there are pilots listening, and they're wondering, well, you know, it's just such a different perspective. I mean, you don't have any feel of the seat. You don't have any, I mean, you can't even look out and see your wing. I mean,
These are two completely different worlds apart. I mean, nothing I ever learned except to, you know, I learned how airplanes fly and theory of flight and all that kind of stuff, and that's the same. But in terms of the skill and the motor coordination skills, there's nothing similar. Basically, the model airplane flying is a totally, completely different skill set from flying a real airplane. So many times, I don't know how many times I've seen it happen. You know, you're at the local field and some gentleman who was, you know, who got a nice, beautiful radio control model airplane for Christmas, you know, comes out in May and says, I want to fly this, you know, and I used to fly in the Air Force and I used to fly commercial, Delta, whatever. And, you know, I asked him, I said, you need any help? Have you ever flown? No, I've never flown it before, but I'm good, you know, and inevitably he'll play lawn darts with it at the end of the runway. It's happened more than once.
Well, you know, there are all kinds of these little mini RC helicopters and things like this, and when I was a kid you had these gas powered airplanes that you would fly. They were you controlled them by lines, right? And you'd do that. This is a world away from any of that, what I'm seeing here. These airplanes look like they're 6 feet wide.
This is really a precision sport. So to begin with, you have to select and build your airplane to very, very exacting standards. Often the components, like the motors and the speed controllers and radios, are built and sold by one, two, maybe three suppliers in the world. So this is very exacting equipment. And then you have to practice. It's like I told you before, it's like, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? For every flight that you see here being put up by a competitor, there are probably 100 flights. And we do 6 flights in the week here. So there's 600 flights on average per competitor that have been done in their hometowns and their home fields since last year. And so there's a lot of dedication and practice that goes into this sport. So you win the contest not today. You win the contest before you get here because of all the practice you did and all the way that you've set up your airplane and made sure that nothing is going to come apart at the very wrong moment.
Has that ever happened to you, John?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's very
painful. Tell me about one of those times. I know this is probably a painful thing to recall, but...
I was flying actually not in a contest, but in an air show, in a local air show where we were asked to fly radio control airplanes for a crowd, and the TV and newspaper was there, and so I was flying, and the control that activates my elevator, which controls how the airplane goes up and down, essentially failed in flight. It was my fault because it was kind of on the tail end of its lifetime, and I really should have replaced it before I did. And
this is the motor, right, that moves it?
This is the servo that moves the control surface, and so I drilled a hole in the field in front of 400 people, TV and newspaper. That was painful.
I'm sorry. That feels painful.
This was 20 years ago, so... I've moved on.
How about one of your high moments? You've won at this. Do you have a wall of ribbons at home or trophies or things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think, in fact, most of the people here today would probably be able to say the same, that they've probably got, you know, 30 or 40 trophies and plaques from local contests and other things like that. And, you know, the high point for me, I've had two high points, I guess. The first one is a few years ago, I was at the top of my game. You know, I was maybe a younger and that sort of thing. And so I was winning a lot, and I would win district championships and that sort of thing. And then the next high point is in the recent year. As I said, my son has entered the sport 3 or 4 years ago, and together we fly contests every summer, and now he beats me, and he's at the top of his game.
Model aircraft pilot John Ford of Kansas City in town for the AMA National Championships out at the Academy of Model Aeronautics on Muncie's east side. A great museum out there, and the competition involving more than 1,000 pilots from across the country and hundreds of spectators. It's remarkable.
Some bright morning when this life is over, I'll fly away.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss, right here on Indiana Public Radio.
Think of it as a 4-week-long convention. They've just wrapped up the National Aero Modeling Championships at a massive airfield on the east side of Muncie. They call this national competition, naturally, the NATS, and we stopped out at the airpark in the middle of the action, talking to some of the pilots and to Richard Hansen, AMA's Public Relations and Government Affairs Representative. The AMA has a fine museum, the competition is incredible to watch, and they have plenty of information for people interested in model aviation. But behind the scenes, the association is also very busy, Hansen says, working with federal, state, and local governments on issues related to model aircraft.
I would imagine drones are getting to be... You're laughing.
Yeah, that's a hot topic these days, and obviously we don't see our aircraft as falling in the category of what's commonly called as drones. But in the public eye, there's also a misperception of what looks similar to a model aircraft is given the title of drone. So we try to stay away from that particular moniker as much as we can.
I guess I think of drones like a Predator or these military devices.
That's actually, in my mind, and the more mainstream definition of a drone would be a militarized unmanned aircraft that is designed and used in the defense industry. We do have model aircraft that are flown what's called visual first-person view, and it's actually a technology where you put a camera in the cockpit of the aircraft with a video downlink, and the pilot's able to fly virtually through the eye of the camera as if he was sitting in the cockpit and flying the aircraft. That could or couldn't be technology that's used by what is otherwise called drones, but in our connotation or the way we're doing it, those are model aircraft that are flown strictly for pleasure and recreation.
So those are part of what you do, first-person video-controlled airplanes?
What they call FPV, and it's another segment of the hobby. It's actually a very popular growing segment of the hobby, where they fly the aircraft virtually through the eye of a camera inside the cockpit.
I would imagine you folks are getting more attention because of militarized drones and the quadcopters and people using RC aircraft as photography platforms. I mean, there's just been a big upswell in interest recently, hasn't there?
Well, there has, and the FAA is currently working on regulation that allow these platforms to fly in the national airspace. As things exist today, other than model aircraft, it's very limited as to what kinds of the aircraft can operate within the national airspace and under special rules that the FAA provides. But there's a large industry growing, a lot of interest, and there's a lot of applications for the unmanned aircraft in the civil environment. Everything from law enforcement to search and rescue to agriculture to journalism. The applications are almost unlimited, and there's a lot of interest and a little bit of an anxiety about the need to get regulations that allow them to start operating.
We're at a point now where they are drafting the rules, I think, right? I mean, is there some concern on your part that sometimes there's an overreach that happens when new rules are drafted?
You're right, and that's something that we've been intimately involved in since 2008. As a matter of fact, AMA participated in the first Aviation Rulemaking Committee that put together recommended rule structure to the FAA for unmanned aircraft. And that was probably our greatest concern, that the regulations that were being considered would have overreaching consequences for model aircraft and be detrimental to the hobby. We pretty much have worked through that issue over the years. As a matter of fact, last year, Congress kind of came to our aid when they passed the FAA reauthorization bill, or what's called the FAA Modernization Reform Act of 2012. Within that legislation was a specific section that provided a special rule for model aircraft that would, in essence, exempt them from regulation as long as they're flown within a certain set of safety guidelines. And the guidelines—
low altitude, away from regular air traffic, that kind of thing?
Pretty much, but the way it was spelled out is they pointed to a set of community-based safety guidelines, such as what AMA has had for its inception since 1936. And it basically said as long as there's a proven set of safety programming that establishes and maintains safe operations, the model aviation can exist within that programming without federal regulations. It did spell out some specific guidelines about not interfering with manned aircraft, about remaining within visual line of sight of the operator, and some instructions on how to contact airports when you're operating proximity to airports.
I'm struck by how much technology is changing. The better batteries.
Well, there's been a lot of improvements in almost all aspects of the hobby, everything from the electronics to the building materials to the engine technology. The advent of the brushless motors has really increased and allowed for the use of electric motors on these aircraft. A lot of what you're seeing now in the multi-rotor segment that is more often than not being identified as in the drone area. That particular technology has only come about because of the miniaturization of electronics and the brushless electric motors and the lithium-based battery power systems.
These are helicopter-looking or helicopter-like aircraft. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, if you're looking for a technical term, they're multi-rotor rotorcraft. Most people are familiar with the single-rotor helicopters, but actually multi-rotor aircraft have been around for years. It's only been just recently with the improvement in electronic technology where the capability and the stability of a multi-rotor aircraft became viable. And right now, because of the technology with onboard accelerometers, gyros, GPS equipment, that you can actually build a multi-rotor aircraft that will literally fly itself.
Richard Hansen, Government Affairs Representative for the Academy of Model Aeronautics in Muncie. They've just wrapped up the National Aero Modeling Championships at their field on the east side. Now the question is, for many of the people involved in remote-controlled aircraft, what new rules the FAA may put into place? There's a lot of concern among people about the increasing capabilities of drones and other aircraft that could represent a threat to privacy, for instance. The AMA is working with lawmakers to separate its hobbyists from other parts of the unmanned vehicle industry that could be coming in for tighter regulation. That's our time for today. As we prepare for landing this edition of Indiana Weekend, please place your tray tables and seat backs in their upright and locked positions. Big thanks to our own skillful pilot, producer Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us at this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. And if you like, consider sending us a short audio clip telling us what's on your mind, what's going on for the summer, that sort of thing. Just use a smartphone or a digital recorder, speak your piece, and email the file to us. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.